Hi, thanks for listening to Music Mothers and Others. We're so pleased to have you. You might hear towards the end of this episode another little other, little baby Anthony. He sounds a bit upset, but he's fine. He just wanted to be involved. We cut him out as best we could, but as you know, babies happen. Thanks for listening.
Mothers.
And others.
Somewhere in the music industry, between sex, drugs and rock and roll and the Wiggles, is the rest of us. Music, Mothers and Others is an audio parents group about popular music. A chance to discuss how parenting fits or doesn't into music industry life. During the series, we'll talk to people from across the industry. Artists, promoters, techs, broadcasters, writers, academics, teachers, anyone who has a gig in industry, whatever that means. Your hosts are Liz.
Hello.
And Shelley. Hi, that's me. And we are industry veterans, academics and parents, as well as members of the broader village.
Today, our Music Mothers and Others guest is Nadi Simpson. Nadi is a Yalawoi writer, composer, musician and culture keeper. Specifically, but not limited to, she is a singer, songwriter, playwright. She's in the vocal duo The Stiff Gins, among other things. She's the musical director of the Barrowgal Choir, as well as a multi-genre artist, including an author of the new book Song of the Crocodile, a novel out via Hatchet Books. I think, is that enough, Nadi? Have we missed some important things?
No, I feel like, you know, going under a rock now, too much talk. But I like to have a go at everything, I guess, is what all that means.
Which is good. I like that. Hey, before we start, Nadi, do you mind if we break my veneer of professionalism for a minute and let people know that you and I met in a previous life? We were at school together or a school near each other, and I can't remember if it was a cricket pitch or a music room we met in. Do you remember which one?
I reckon it was probably both. We were in the music room and then we went out for training. It was probably something like that.
That's right. Do you remember much about, like, what I really love about that is that I feel like we had a really musical, or I had a really musical education. Like, it just, and I don't know that it was something that was really planned or it was just kind of a happy accident. Do you feel that too, that you had like a formal musical education?
Yeah, I do. I think sort of reflecting back 20 years later, I was really grateful that there was the opportunity to try instruments and to sing in choirs and to be around really, well, we're all little burgeoning sort of creatives back then. And I'm very grateful for that sort of the introduction to formal music. So I wasn't very good at it, but I managed to find my way through, you know, and to find the type of music that was the best for me. So, yeah, very formative years back at school.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say you weren't very good at it, but for someone that wasn't very good at it, that's not stopped you going on.
You know, talent isn't always a requirement. Sometimes it's just like tenacity, I think, but I enjoyed it. I think the reason why I did it was because it was a way to explore the world, which was really important in your teenage years. You know, it sort of was a language that made sense to me much more so than maths and science and things like that. It was sort of like the beginning of my growth in relating to people in different ways. So that's why I'm very grateful for all the musicianship classes that I did after school. I only went to third grade.
You got two more than me, musicianship, as we used to call it.
It was pretty full on. I mean, very written. It was a real sort of westernised way to access sound. And next to us in third grade or preliminary or whatever were these eighth grade piano players. And I think I look back on that and there was never a competition. It was almost like that was something to, it was exciting to be around people who were further down a pathway of learning than you were. So you just sort of understood the landscape a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. And did that, I found that too, that it wasn't competitive, which was nice. Were you having informal music education at the same time too? You know, I mean, for me, I was just locked in a room, you know, with a guitar trying to work out Nirvana chords, you know, by ear or, you know, stuff like that. What else were you doing outside school?
My dad's family from Walgett, and his brothers, he's one of 11 and there's about four of them in the band. One big long word, they were called Footful of Bindies.
And, ouch! Yeah, sounds painful.
They were real oral musicians. They could hear anything on, the shittiest radio ever, hear it and pick up an instrument, one of many that they could play, and just belt it out. So amazing. I wasn't partaking in that, but I was watching how easily this sort of idea of performance and entertainment and music as a way to connect the place where that sat in our own family history. And then I was slogging over, you know, what was I slogging over? Triplets or something ridiculous. Or Taffa Teffy, all that stuff coming back to me now.
So far.
Yeah, that's it. Sort of working out how do these things connect to each other. So I was doing less of the oral stuff. I was doing a lot of the formal lower grade learning and seeing that and thinking, I wonder how I connect to that sort of way. And I think, you know, when I picked up a guitar, which was after school, then I started to get an understanding of, you can feel it as well as know it.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever feel like one was competing with the other?
Not at that time, I think, because it was also new to me. You know, our little teenage brains weren't formed properly. I wasn't thinking about anything past, you know, the next Saturday cricket match, really. So I was sort of like I had blindfold walking down this sort of the stave, working out and listening and gravitating towards things. Later in life, I realised, there were these two kind of almost competing ways to be musically, but I thankfully didn't suffer at the expense of one or the other.
Yeah, definitely. Well, on Music Mothers and Others, we're interested to see how parenting or caring for kids or being an auntie or something like that somehow slips into your working life. So have you got any involvement with kids in your working life? And as we said in our intro, you have had currently have a diverse number of roles. Are you working with children at all?
Before the lockdown, I had this sort of I happened upon, how did this happen? When my son was in primary school, he's in year 8 now, I sort of got talking with some of the teachers. They were very supportive of Aboriginal perspectives at the primary school, and somehow I lucked into this gig in Indigenous garden lessons. Oh, man, and it was the most beautiful time of my life. I tell you, I was that tired. I thought, you know, I was not in training. I have one sort of breezy kind of kid. But I love the energy that it expended or drew out from me to share and talk and keep kids interested and engaged in how to see natural things. And I learned much more than I ever gave. And, you know, kids at that age, they have these instinct for natural things and cultural things and relationships that I really think of that as a real golden era in my face-to-face kind of thing. I always thought, you know, it would have only taken a couple more conversations in my life to have gone and trained as a teacher, because I've got teachers all through my family and I understand and I really value the exchange the thing that happens between someone who loves teaching and someone who wants to learn. So those Aboriginal garden lessons, you know, I love them. And because you're out in the rain maybe or in the drizzle or in the hot heat, and it's a great leveller. And that sort of stopped for me at the beginning of the year, and I've been an inside person. But I realised what a big space, happy space that played in my life, yeah.
That sounds amazing. And you know, still being in lockdown here at this moment, I think being outside sounds like such a joy. Being outside with kids sounds awesome. Did you incorporate or any singing or any songwriting or anything musical with that?
Yeah, I made up this little, we were talking about bugs and all this sort of stuff, you know, and I think, well, how can I, because, you know, at that time I was thinking about the nature of learning, as we were just talking about the nature of musical learning, the nature of knowledge exchange in an Aboriginal sense. And you need to move and sing and embody what you're hearing, don't you know. it's no good just talking. You've got to show it and sort of bring it to life in a dimension, a whole lot of different dimensions. So we had a little Amungin dance, a little mosquito dance. We had the girls, a girls' dance, a boys' dance, and they were always great. They were great hits. I should do like a kids' album or something. I was just thinking about them now. It was really lovely, you know, because language was in it too. A couple of words and they pick it up like that and, you know, it's sort of, it's a different way to interact. And, you know, a lot of kids would come up to me in the playground after sing, oh, mungin, 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 and pretend there's a mozzie trying to bite them. It was just such a beautiful thing and I realised how the combination of things that was going on there, language, culture, nature and children's thirst for what is it, a relationship to those things. So when they come up in the playground like that, I just think, oh, I have to remember, you know. Song and music is a great way to remember. It's good for everyone that way.
Hi, I'm Bill from Teeny Tiny Stevies and you're listening to Music Mothers and Others.
Nadi, I know you were joking, or maybe you were joking, but if you want a kids' album, let's launch it here, eh?
Yeah, we'll buy it.
Oh, yeah. I've got some deadly sort of songs anyway. Oh, well, I think they're deadly. Nobody on earth has ever heard them. So that may change, but it's a Halloween suite. So it was about the bush bogies, the yowies and the bunyips and all that stuff. No, I've got a song that I'm, you know, you're making me think about now. Anyway.
Do you reckon it'd be different to approach like just a kids only album, or do you think what's stopped you so far?
That's a really great question. I mean, I don't know actually. I think the intensity for me, the pure joy of performance, happens with kids. I do really love that, and also with kids, you can't control. You know, with you like to think as a sort of a songwriter that you can craft a journey for an audience. I don't know whether that's me just want to be this sort of artist. But with kids, you can't craft it. You put it on the table and they'll either stand up and clap or put their hands over their ears right in front of you. So it's a very, is it visceral, reaction to what they hear straight away. The questions I start to ask is, how do you get those things to kids, because it is such a sensory experience. You want them to have reactions that maybe CDs, I've grown to, you know, not be so happy with CDs over my lifetime, because I don't know, it's sort of like the flattening of a painting, or sometimes the black and just the black and white, or the shades of a painting when there can be so much more. Yeah, I don't know. I'm thinking about those songs now.
Nadi, can you tell us about how your book Song of the Crocodile came about?
Well, you know, I joke and say that my kind of folk songs were getting too long and too slow, and so I had to kind of, you know, just try and find another way to tell all these long, drawn-out stories. It sort of was a natural, very natural progression to me that was not a different, it wasn't that different. I mean, I've thought a little bit about it, and I think for Indigenous people, story is a story, whether you move it or you paint it or you speak it or you sing it or you write it. It's the driver is the energy of that story, mm-hmm. and what your body or your kind of mind can bring to propel it. So the discipline of, I don't know, music or visual arts or literature, sort of that separation doesn't exist as strongly in what I understand to be Indigenous storytelling as it does in mainstream things. So I found writing, I wanted to write a story, I wanted to explore things a bit more deeply than I could in a 3-minute song. And I actually, because I get distracted, I didn't want to be distracted by, and I mean this in a really lovely way, by the reaction of an audience. You could almost write and think, you know, when you get to the end, then there is an understanding of a crowd who are going to engage with it. But while you're doing it, you can search as deep as you want and let that story sort of permeate within your own reality. So, yeah, I wanted to write something, and I wanted to explore things in a bit more detail than I could with a song. Plus, my, you know, I love playing guitar, but I'm very limited. So the limitations, and actually the metered limitations, and the relationship to time, and even construction that I have been trained for, or trained myself for in music, was kind of not there when I started writing because I didn't know what I was doing.
Do you mind if I ask you a question that I know men don't get asked, but if you're easily distracted, plus you've got family around, you mentioned you're a mum yourself and stuff, how do you do all these other different things and keep family going and everything? Like, have you found you've had to that a particular negotiation?
I think, you know, I said the other day to somebody, you know, I've always felt really selfish for being an artist or wanting to write or wanting to be a musician and trying to have a creative career, because it's sort of you got to put that first. And you know, on reflection, I think that there, for most of my son's life, I've been doing creative things, and we don't have, not that it's about that, we don't have a lot to show for it, but what we do have, I think, the kind of in the output of those creative things is that we, and he, who sort of witnesses it and it takes part of it, is part of it in a kind of really deep way. We are highly attuned to other people. Yeah. And I think, well, if that's the kind of mother I am, if I, you know, make the mistake of not spending as much time as I feel I should, yet I have a son and, you know, nieces and nephew who are able to be empathetic, sympathetic, who are able to relate and are comfortable with all different types of people, then that's a really hard thing to teach. They only understand it by seeing it, you know. So that's the kind of payoff. And we all want to be superwoman and we all wish we could do more. But I think we can see those very deep things working in people, and that those things are the things that allow us to not feel so guilty and keep creating, because there's this different type of innate sort of connection that you're passing on that if you tried to, you wouldn't be able to, maybe.
Sometimes we find that musicians want to keep their working musical life separate from home life, because, you know, you're tired at the end of the day and the last thing you want to do is, I guess, play your own music to your kids or teach your kids something about your guitar if you're a guitarist or something like that. You just kind of want to switch off and have some off time, and that off time can be family time. Have you felt a need to switch off from work when you're with your family, or do you just sort of see it as one big blending of the two worlds coming together?
Yeah, I think it's more of a blending. I mean, because a lot of the stuff that I like to create is around culture. So more and more now that he's a teenager, when I'm getting into cultural things, it's like, hey, son, listen, what do you think about this? And how do you feel about it? Because I'm actually, it's not about the art. It's about our understanding of who we are, you know, and how we fit into things. Also, kids don't want to, they're actually the ones that don't want you to they would, you know, when he's at school, he wants to learn. He doesn't want to come home and listen to a lecture about Uluru spirituality from his mum when he gets home. So there's this sort of beautiful give and take, and sometimes there are natural, beautiful conversations about cultural things or creative things. When I was writing, I would tell him where I was up to and say, what do you think should happen now? And he just, you know, he was maybe 11, and he would say, he would make up things in his mind, and there would be a spark of something in there that oftentimes I would think about, and if not work in, work around. Because so we had this really lovely co-creation. I think for women, you know, we're good at that stuff. That's how we want to do it, and finding ways to bring the people that we love into the work that we do strengthens everything. Yeah, so it's a big blended mashed potato of a thing.
I love it described like that, a mashed potato.
It sounds delicious as well.
But it's so sad that we have to think about art as something that's selfish. Isn't it? Like, it's just, and I mean, I've made the mistake of just having the bloody treasurer on telling us all too about what we're not getting as well. But you know what I mean? It's just, I just sort of sit there and think, you're absolutely right. You're teaching something that can't be taught any other way in some ways. And if you were a corporate banker, you wouldn't see your kids anymore. In fact, you'd see them a lot less. But one's so revered and so kind of, you know, appreciated, and the other's like, what are you lot doing? You know, get a haircut and a real job, you know, it's terrible.
When I thought about that, and I thought, oh, gee, you know, you shouldn't be that hard on yourself. But I realised in that thought process, because I always was comparing it to, you know, I find it really hard to work for someone. You know, if I'm fully engaged, I'll get into it and I will run out of steam. And I thought, what's wrong with me, you know, that I don't, the sort of work that I want to do, it's not that I don't want to work, but the work I want to do doesn't seem to be there. And it was only when I realised that the way that I need to work is a bit of that and a bit of this and a bit of music and some writing and some talking to people, that that's really hard work. And that suits me. It's not that. Less so, I was being selfish, but I hadn't seen the right way for me to be. And so now I've got a lot of balls in the air, and I seem to be able to. It satisfies me getting distracted, because I've always got something else to get onto, and I'm able to work in that way. And when I said I was being selfish, because I couldn't see what I needed to do. So now I'm looking forward, actually, to not feeling guilty about being creative and seeing what that does to my work and how I interact with people and my family and our happiness.
2SER 107.3 FM.
Well, as part of the Stiff Gins and the Bareagle Choir, you have in the past performed in all kinds of settings, right? So from folk festivals to TEDx events. And, you know, as a parent or seeing parents in the audience with kids, sometimes music performance sites can be super parent-kid friendly.
Yeah.
And sometimes they can be very unfriendly in terms of, you know, the time of day or the kind of music or the volume or something like that. So Liz and I are interested in thinking about what changes to the music industry or the way live performance events are held. Could you recommend that might make it a bit more pleasurable for an artist or a concert goer or something like that to bring your kids along to?
I'm lucky to be sort of involved in some talks with Indigenous artists all over Australia, and we're having the same conversation, parallel conversation about what do we need for an industry that sort of supports and encourages and empowers us as Aboriginal people. Part of the way I interact with that question is that, you know, we need to create it for ourselves, because no one's going to do it. For us as Indigenous people, saying, you know, maybe if we're asking for all these changes in the industry, maybe it's just set up the wrong way, and we need to say our success looks different, the drivers are different, the outcomes are different, the products, if there are any, are for a different reason. The cultural conversation and the sort of the gendered conversation are tightly linked to us as First Nations artists, because we have a very clear understanding that there's men's way and women's way, men's business, women's business, and those two things complement each other. It's not at the expense of the other. So definitely with Aboriginal women's music, we're starting to talk about what do we need? What do we want? And most importantly, not how do we do it for others, but how do we do it to sustain each other. They're the sort of yarns that we're thinking about now. It's really hard when you've got this big monster of industry that tell you to have product and promote yourself and, you know, do it this way, and actually everyone who can help you do it is actually part of that big machine. So, and my sister Lucy, who's an artist, she's a great inspiration to me. She is all about not quite as in volume, but or small as in scale, quiet and small in strength. Do you know what I mean? Oh, that doesn't sound right in English, but the strength can also be low volume. The strength can also be in small things, because in those moments you are connecting, creating community with other women. So I'd love to, let's solve all those problems right now. But I think women know in the way that we are with each other, and not getting, it's not distracted, it's not seduced, it's some word I can't think of. And just knowing that we can create the model of each other's success. It doesn't have to be the only one that we can see. If we invest in each other, that's what it needs to look like.
I love that answer. I think that when you're making music sometimes to earn a living, you feel you have to be part of this corporate machinery that requires you to have certain things like products at a particular price or a touring schedule or a certain number of shows and so on. Mm. But who determines these things? Mm. We just take it as accepted because that's kind of how it's been since music or popular music performance has been around, let's just say, you know, in Australia. But there's no reason why we can't actually rewrite those rules, which are probably made by male figures in business and who perhaps don't understand the needs of women performers and certainly Indigenous performers as well.
Who left their kids at home with the with their wives to look after, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's true. I mean, I reckon it's really exciting to think about the female music economy because it would be completely different to what is there now. Imagine if, you know, they gave us all a space to dream that up with some toys in the corner and, you know, put on lunch and, some, and a lot of coffee. That would be good. And
breastfeeding space.
All that. Imagine what that is. That's really exciting to me.
How do we get that happening, Nadi? If you need anything, let us know. You lead us. You tell us where we need to go and we'll be there.
You guys are already doing it. This is what you're doing. What you're doing is it. I don't know. You had the treasurer on. Should have hit him up. So, listen, we're coming to your office in it soon. When all this COVID is over, there's going to be a big mob of women there with our kids, so you better look after us because we're going to change the world.
Normally we ask people just to end the sentence as part of the show, the kids and I are listening to. Just if you've got something that you and your boy or your niece and nephew or you're listening to with your kids, and it can be kids' stuff or not, it can be whatever you're listening to altogether. Is there something in particular that you're all into at the moment?
We're in Aboriginal housing co-op here. We're on level two of this Art Deco place in Petersham, and we've got two huge big Sydney Blue Gums out the front of our unit, and my window and son's window open into the treetops of these Blue Gums, and both of us have been listening and waking up to the magpies, which we've been here 4 years, and these fellas are stronger than ever. And so much, so noticeable. You know, we've got a train line, a street down the back of them, but their song and their conversations with each other over the telegraph poles and on the roofs of the other houses is the way that we wake up. And we're talking about it. Did you hear that? Did you hear today and that one that went really high? And what about the one that just kept going nonstop? And son would say, yeah, he was up really early. And this is a beautiful thing that we're experiencing in our own ways, separated by a wall, you know, but together in the great connectedness. So we've been listening to the magpies.
They sound lovely. Do you reckon they're more during lockdown? Do you reckon there are more birds out?
I think when it first started, because we're right under the flight path here too, and it was dead quiet, it was eerie. And first of all, you think how quiet the city is, but then the sound becomes the sounds of nature rather than the city. And I reckon our ears definitely at the beginning were more attuned to those quieter, softer sounds that my sister always reminds me of, those strong but quiet things. As city's starting to wiggle its shoulders again now, so things are sort of starting to sound a little bit more modern, I don't know. Busy, a little bit more busy now, but it was beautiful to have that interjection of still sound, and now we're getting back to the busy bit.
Mm.
Thank you so much, Nadi Simpson, for being our guest on Music Mothers and Others. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you very much. See you down at Josh Strindberg's office in, let's say, 7 months' time.
Music Mothers and Others is a show written and produced by Liz Dufresne and Shelley Brunt. We're broadcast on Sydney's 2SER on 107.3 FM, and we are also a podcast. Find our episodes on all your usual services, such as Apple and Spotify, or our website, musicmothersandothers.com. We'd love you to leave a review. It would make it easier for other people to find us. Visit us on Facebook and Instagram and leave us a message. See you next time.